everything you need
for a brand new day.
This is Paplo for Breakfast.
Hello and welcome to the Paplo for Breakfast podcast. This week's edition, we're going to dive into International Women's Day with Managing Consultant in the HR world, Robin Gelassi. She's going to join us to discuss the importance of it, what are some of the pressing issues facing women globally today, and what can be done with organisations to achieve more balance. We'll dive into that very, very shortly. We'll get some of those hot topics trending online from the Big Smoke as well with Alexandra. But first, let's talk supermarkets, because the expose on Four Corners has sparked the debate when it comes to those supermarket prices. And Greg Jericho from the Australian Institute joined me this week to discuss the prices and what can be done. Now, the Australian Institute is one of the country's most influential public policy think tanks. They're based out of Canberra. We won't hold that against them, but they do conduct high impact research that combines rigorous fact-driven material with cutting edge communication strategies. Now, joining us today to discuss the supermarkets and the price war or not happening at the moment in the aisles, it is Greg Jericho. He's the chief economist at the Australian Institute. Greg, good morning.
G'day, Pablo.
Now, last week, obviously, a lot of talk around the Woolies CEO walking out of that interview on Four Corners. But to me, that wasn't really the big headline. Obviously, it was the big splashy thing that a lot of people focused in on. But what was your sort of main takeaway from that reporting last week?
Yeah, I thought the program was really good because it, not just because it, highlighted the embarrassment of the Woolworths CEO, but really it just shone a light on the practices of both Coles and Woolies that kind of, I think, resonated with people because they know that this is happening, but they're not quite sure if what they see with their eyes is true. And it really just highlighted that those two companies are really not competing, or not competing on price. They'll compete around the edges on other things, but when it comes to price, they're not really going hard at each other. And also, what I think is really important is, you know, farmers, the people who are actually providing all the groceries, they are the ones who are kind of getting shafted because they're not competing for customers, but they're also not really competing with the suppliers. They're all just caring about their own profits.
Now, a post went up recently on the Australian Institute's Facebook page, and it said the profit margins of Australian supermarkets are world leading. Now, that is great for shareholders, really bad for customers.
Yeah, what we've found is that Coles and Woolworths are getting, you know, Woolworths is just a touch over 6% profit margin now, whereas compared with the profit margins of supermarket chains in the US, like Walmart, chains in the UK are much lower, around 2-3%. And both Coles and Woolies are just miles ahead of what supermarket chains in other countries would expect. You know, supermarket chains are generally pretty low profit margin because they don't do a lot, really. They take food from suppliers, they put it on the shelves, that we come in and take them off the shelves. It's not like they're doing anything, adding any great value. Their main value that they add is convenience, and what they do is work really hard to ensure that they're the only ones who can be convenient. So it really highlights just how much Coles and Woolworths are really taking us all for a bit of a ride.
Now, put your economic hat on. Does it all just come down to competition? Do we need more big players in Australia? And will that sort out the problem?
That is the key thing we need. We really do need more competition, because what we have at the, what we saw when Aldi, for example, came into the market was there was a bit of competition finally springing up, because Coles and Woolies were like, oh, geez, we've actually got to fight for our customers here. And but what's happened since then, and this is something that Alan Fells has found in his inquiry into grocery profits, is that they've kind of all just settled into a nice, comfortable position. Aldi got about 10% of the stake, and they're kind of content there, and Woolies and Coles are content that they've fought them off. So more competition is really what is important here, because it's not a case of Coles and Woolies are breaking the law and, you know, colluding. It's the fact they don't need to. Everything is so comfortable. They know exactly what each other is charging, when they're charging it, and they kind of take it in turns. One thing I always notice, because I often buy, you know, Coke, And I know that 1 week Coles will have Coke on special, and the next week it'll be Woolies' turn to have Coke on special. They're never fighting at the same time. And it's become so obvious and so comfortable that I think we really need to look at competition policy in Australia and what's really hurting consumers.
So what's our best strategy? Do we send the Four Corners program to overseas to all the supermarket big chains and say, hey, look how much money you can make. Come to Australia. We need some help.
Well, one of the things that Four Corners highlighted is that it's really tough for overseas companies to come here because Coles and Woolies have kind of bought up all the land. And even if they haven't got a supermarket on there, they've bought it up so that no one else can put a supermarket there. And Coles will say, oh, it's in our plans. And Woolies will say, oh, yes, that's part of our 10-year plan to have another supermarket there. But while they're hoarding that land, other entrants can't come in and offer an alternative, and that's a big issue. And so what we really need is we need the government to actually step up and one, not just look at competition and whether they're, you know, colluding, but actually look at prices and put a real focus on, okay, why has the price of milk gone up so much? Why has the price of bread gone up so much? Actually, let's have a look at your books and see, are you just fattening your profit margins? Because, you know, the line that, oh, wheat prices have gone up is only good for so long. You know, wheat prices go up and down, but we know the price of our bread doesn't go up and down.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And I know a lot of inquiries are going to happen, but this stuff takes time. We're looking at like 12 months before some of this information will probably come back to the public. And in the meantime, we're all going to be paying those high prices, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, governments need to, you know, wait for the reports and everything, but there are some things that kind of we don't need to wait for. We know that things are happening, and, you know, the government could straight away give the ACCC more powers to actually investigate prices, because it's quite stunning that the ACCC does not have the power to just go and investigate high prices. They have the power to investigate whether they're being non-competitive or, you know, they're colluding. But if the price of something just seems high, unless there is the sense that they're doing this to ensure that, you know, to undercut other companies and run them out of the industry, they can't really do anything. So the government could pretty much, you know, straight away say, right, we're giving you more powers, we're giving you more money to go and investigate, to really go and look at these things. Or if they don't think the ACCC is the right place, they could create another body. I mean, these are not things you have to wait, because it's a case of if you give them more powers and they go and they say, oh, actually, everything's kind of cool, well, then that's fine. It's good to know that the supermarkets have got someone looking over their shoulder, but I think we all know that probably they won't be coming back and say things are all cool. They're going to come back and say, geez, look at what we've found.
Thank you, Greg. Now, of course, International Women's Day was this week, and I sat down with HR leader Robin Jalaski to run through some of the big issues facing women in 2024. On Triple M, we are doing nothing but women of rock this morning, playing some of the greatest women artists. And, of course, it is International Women's Day. So we're bringing in Managing Consultant Robin Jalaski. She's from Impact People Solutions. She's a HR leader with 20 years of professional experience. Robin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, Pablo, for having me.
Not a problem. Now, we were sort of talking during the songs about what you've got planned today for International Women's Day. But what does the day sort of mean to you?
Look, today is always very exciting for me. It's like celebrating all of the awesome women in our lives, from our mums to our sisters to our colleagues, our friends, but also women all over the world and our future together. So it's certainly a day of celebration and thinking about how far we've come and what's next for us.
Well, you're celebrating today as well because you're doing a bit of a book launch, which is very cool.
Yeah, I am. There's a great new book come out, which is by the awesome women at a company called Striven. And the book is called Women in Leadership. And they've interviewed 100 awesome Australian women about their journeys. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to be one of them. So get your hands on a copy if you can. It's a great read.
So in your opinion, 2024, what are some of the most pressing issues you think facing women globally today, like Australia, international as well? And what does today sort of do as far as serving a platform to address and raise awareness on the issues?
Yeah, look, there are many issues facing women, as we know. And, you know, today's theme, the United Nations theme, is invest in women, accelerate progress. And so if we take that as our start, you know, the number one thing we should be thinking about today is connecting women with financial resources mm-hmm. that can help them meet their basic needs and, you know, maybe even start to grow some businesses. And the flow on from that, another issue that we face is jobs. Because when women thrive in the world of work, they're better positioned to exercise their agency and realise their rights. But the work has to be meaningful, productive. It can't just be something that, you know, we throw to women and say, there, you have something to do. It's got to be meaningful, but also time. You know, women spend three times more time than men do on unpaid care and domestic work. And, of course, one thing we all know about is security. So domestic violence, certainly a pressing issue, an ongoing issue for women, and gender-based violence, conflict, food insecurity, all of those things are issues that we should be considering on a day like today, but also all year round.
Yeah.
Today just brings a little bit of a spotlight to it.
So obviously you're in the corporate world. What advice would you give? And I've got an eight-year-old daughter that I want, you know, to have all the opportunities in the world too. So what kind of advice would you give young women entering the corporate world today?
Work hard. Yeah. Work hard. Enjoy it. Genuinely. Don't feel afraid to call out inappropriate behaviour or inequality where you see it. We have laws now. 20 years ago when I started, it wasn't so easy. Enjoy the ride, work super hard, and call out anything that feels uncomfortable or not right.
Good advice. And I think that's something for us as well, because it is uncomfortable sometimes when someone makes an inappropriate remark, and sometimes it's easier, right, to not say anything. But it's on all of us to say something and say, hey, you know what, it's not really appropriate. So putting your HR hat on, how can organisations, and, you know, we're in WA, so a lot of mining organisations, big business here, what can they do to make some progress towards gender equality, empowerment of women, not just today, but throughout the year?
Yeah. Look, I actually work with a mining organisation, a very cool company, one of my clients. And what can we do? We can do what they do, and that's measure the data. Track the data. Actively seek out women. And that doesn't mean that we have to hire women because of their gender, but it does mean that when we're looking at women, when we're looking at filling roles, rather, we might consider a woman in the mix, if one exists, that's able to do the work. And let's educate everybody across the business, not just me, everybody, about what makes an inclusive and safe working environment. So there are a lot of things that women can do and organisations can do to make the world more inclusive. Track the data as it relates to salary, as it relates to female participation in the workforce, and educate our teams. They would be my top two tips.
And what about stereotypes? Do you think there's some stereotypes in business and in the world that you'd like to see broken?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And my number one is there's a stereotype, and perhaps it's fading fast. I hope that it is. But it's the thought that women are somehow less ambitious than men. And that is, in my experience, simply not true. We have ambition. We certainly do, and we should be taken just as seriously as men. And I'm really grateful to say that I'm seeing that change, and I'm hoping that that stereotype is fading fast.
Thanks, Robin. Now let's discuss some of those hot topics trending online, some of the quirky stuff, with Alexandra from the opinion website, thebigsmoke.com.au. We know the kids love TikTok, but how much do they love those followers on TikTok, Alex?
So this is interesting because it was a study that was done to look into how Gen Z and millennials respond to their credit ratings versus their popularity online. And what they found was that 9 out of 10 millennials would rather have an excellent credit score than 50,000 followers on TikTok. However, you know, we're looking at, you know, Gen Zers preferring you know, having social media followers. But I think what this really does show is the increase in how we value our popularity online. So the idea that we actually would rather have followers, you know, I don't believe it's because the people think that they can monetize those followers. So I don't think it's a situation where they're going, all right, I don't need a good credit rating because if I have great followers on TikTok, I'll make a lot of money. I think it's more about being buying into feeling like they need that popularity, they need that visibility online, and they feel like they're not seen if they don't have those followers.
I mean, it was that thing, right? I remember back in the day with MySpace, we used to rank our friends.
Right, I remember that. And, you know, I remember on MySpace, I would have to change it based on the because I was mad at that girl. You know, she's out of the top three.
So, I mean, there's this, like, innate desire for us to sort of have these friends, show that we have, like, this status in society. And, yeah, we got to rank our friends as well. It's incredible where this is going. Now, when it comes to wrinkles, my wife has always asked me, can you see this one? I've definitely got a lot of wrinkles on my face. There's no denying it. It is going to happen as I get older and older. What's the latest study found? Is that good news or bad news?
I'm a bit sad about this research because it was really depressing. Basically what they found, and this was a study that was done in Germany, and participants were made to judge the faces of people aged between 18 to 68. And what they found was that older people were perceived as less pleasant. And there was no reason for this other than the wrinkles on their face and their perceived attractiveness. So it was about impressions, first impressions that have lasting implications, and a negative effect of how wrinkles are perceived. Still in 2024, there was still a demand and a preference for smoother foreheads and tighter jawlines.
I'm done for.
I just think, you know what, I mean, it's interesting too, because I think 30, 40 years ago, the perception of somebody with wrinkles would have been trustworthy, wise.
Wisdom, right? Yeah.
There was that sense of, I can trust this person. But now it was interesting that they deemed it less pleasant and less trustworthy, not just less attractive.
Now, lastly, businesses are asking about digital debt. And how does this impact Australian employees?
So this is an interesting concept. It's not particularly new, but, you know, we talk about the right to disconnect. And that is something that we talk about a lot in Australia, especially around legislation. And, you know, the employee's right to refuse unreasonable after-hours contact. Now, what we're seeing more of is a rise in digital debt, which is a term that was introduced actually by Microsoft, but it's all about the vast volume of communication that we're seeing. So this is, you know, people saying that they spend 57% of their day communicating as opposed to doing work. So it was the stress that it was, the toll it would take on an individual because of the fact that they were more focused on responding to people than they were actually producing work that they were proud of. And then that would actually accrue almost like interest with the person's day. So there's that tipping point between, I can't really switch off at 5 p.m. because all I've done today is respond to people. Now I have to do some work. And then after dinner, they're going back to work to actually respond to emails. So it was this sense of feeling out of control because of the way communication is happening in the workplace. And that's because we've got Zoom, we've got Slack, we've got Teams, we've got WhatsApp, LinkedIn messaging. You know, everybody has different diaries, you know. And so the research found that there's easily around 1,000 data points every day that the average employee is having to manage.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? And I mean, the thing we can all cut down on, and I speak not trying to single anyone out, is the reply all emails. And the worst ones are when they reply all and say thank you. It's like, that did not everyone needed to see that.
Or reply all with an inside joke that the other 30 people don't know what is going on. Like, why?
And that does it for this week's edition of the Pablo for Breakfast podcast. See you Monday from 6.
From round the corner
to your street and neighbourhood,
this is Pablo for Breakfast.